Well, obviously a lot to talk about in Major League Baseball, and especially around the Toronto Blue Jays. Tough week for the Jays, to say the least. They are off today and heading to Tampa to open up a series against the Rays starting tomorrow. Dan Schulman from ESPN Sunday Night Baseball, and of course one of the voices of the Toronto Blue Jays on Sportsnet, joins us as he always does on Thursdays. And Dan, good to talk to you. I know we've talked in the past about it being early and not getting too far ahead of ourselves, but as April wraps up, it's been a tough week for the Toronto Blue Jays.
Yeah, it really was. I think it's still early, but it's closer to not being early than it was last week when we talked. I was talking with my son about it. He was looking at the schedule, and he goes, like, where are the easy games? And I said, there aren't any easy games in the American League this year. You know, Houston's not playing well. Minnesota's not real good right now. But the Blue Jays go to Tampa Bay, and then after that, it's Texas, the Dodgers, the Giants, Texas. It just doesn't get any easier. And at the end of the month, I think this is a huge stretch to keep an eye on. At the end of May, 12 consecutive games against the Yankees and Red Sox. If the Blue Jays haven't figured it out by that point, they may play themselves out of the race. Now, it's really, really early, and they could be in first place by then, and they could win all 12 of those games, but they've got to be playing better baseball heading into that stretch against the Yankees and Red Sox. You know, that's obviously 12 games in a row against your two biggest competitors, maybe. That's a big chunk of your season when it comes to knowing who's going to contend and who's not going to contend. They just, you know, there aren't a lot of reinforcements. There aren't a lot of crazy moves they can make. The guys they have just have to start playing better.
And I think that was kind of the message of Josh Donaldson yesterday, right? I mean, when it comes to the offense of this team, there's clearly no reason why they can't pick it up.
There's no reason why they can't pick it up, but they aren't necessarily going to score whatever 900 runs or whatever it is just because they did last year. A new year's a new situation. Yes, they've all got track records. Yes, they're better than this. There's no way they should be scoring under 4 runs per game or whatever it is. You know, you got to believe Martin's going to get better, and you got to believe Tulowitzki's going to get better. They're not getting a whole lot out of first base, and they got a lot out of first base last year. They will start scoring runs, but I think Donaldson was maybe calling some people out without wanting to name them. And I don't know exactly what he meant. You know, did he mean you got to come in here earlier and look at video? Did he mean you got to get in the cage? Did he mean extra early BP? Or was it the approach at the plate? You know, it was a general comment that he made. He didn't get into specific things, and he certainly didn't get into specific people. But I think it was a message that he wanted the rest of the room to hear.
We get all the information from the main shop. Sportsnet does a great job with stats. Now, as somebody on the outside, I looked at one number, and I want to run it by you. How worried should I be as a Jays fan the number of times that this team has gone into double digits and strikeouts in a game? It's happened a lot early on, or is that something that's overblown?
I think it is a factor. I mean, I know some teams like Houston the last couple of years, and the Cubs even last year, they didn't care about it. They say an out is an out, all those strikeouts are more than balanced by the home runs and the doubles and guys swinging for the, and that's great. You know, last year nobody would have cared if the Blue Jays struck out a ton because they were, you know, hitting home runs every game and the best offense in baseball and so forth. It's magnified when you're not doing well. But I think it is a little bit of a concern, and I think they could change their approach a little bit, not a lot. You can't make these guys different hitters than they are, but certain hitters, not the 3-4-5 guys, obviously, or 2-3-4 guys, obviously, but certain hitters, I think maybe it's time to say, let's just get a base hit to right field. You know, let's just try to put the ball in play, move a runner, that kind of thing. Chip away at it bit by bit. Again, you know, these guys, their muscle memory is so strong. They've been what they've been for so many years. You can't take home run hitters and make them play small ball. You can't take small ball guys and tell them to hit the balls over the fence. They are what they are to a certain extent. But I think if they did cut down on the strikeouts, put the ball in play a little bit more, that maybe a trickle could become a flood eventually.
And it's funny, we talk about Josh Donaldson and what he said yesterday. A couple days ago was Marcus Stroman showing some outward frustration for, you know, what is going on clearly with the bullpen. When you look at these two, I mean, obviously Donaldson handled it the right way, right? I mean, that's how you get away with it. Marcus Stroman maybe a little bit too emotional?
Well, I don't think Marcus Stroman was upset at Brett Cecil at all. I don't know if you guys think that. Like, I know that's not the case because I know Marcus Stroman. Marcus Stroman was upset at Marcus Stroman that he couldn't finish the seventh inning and that he put Cecil and his team in that situation. That having been said, it didn't look great on TV, obviously. And I would bet anything that it doesn't happen again to that level. But Marcus Stroman is a very expressive, emotional person. We've all seen that in a positive sense many, many times. That's part of what makes him who he is. It's part of his fuel. I know to some it came across like he was upset at Cecil, but he wasn't. He was upset at himself. And I'm sure he spoke with Cecil, and I know they spoke with him after the game. And if the same situation comes up again, he'll be more subdued. But again, you know, how do you make Bautista less intense? How do you make Stroman less emotional? How do you make Donaldson, not speak his mind? This is what these guys are. They are what they are.
Yep.
And sometimes you got to take the bad with the good, because the good is what makes them the players that they are too.
Well, and I'm glad I asked the question, because I really do appreciate where you came from on that, because I think sometimes in sports it's really easy, especially with young guys, to try and, well, you know, put them in their place. But there is we've had this conversation with a lot in baseball. There is a role for emotion.
Absolutely. And from having seen Marcus Stroman at spring training and in the clubhouse and so on, you know, he talks about 24 brothers, and he means that stuff. Like, he's a good teammate. He bounces around that clubhouse from locker to locker, chair to chair, talking to people. You know, he and Sanchez, as everybody knows, are best buddies. I mean, this guy puts blood, sweat, and tears into everything, from the moment he gets up until the moment he goes to sleep. He loves the city. He loves the country. He loves the fans. He loves being in Toronto. Anybody who doesn't know a lot about him, go to the Players Tribune and find Marcus Stroman's article on the Players Tribune. You'll learn a lot more about him, and everybody will come out of there with a favorable impression of him.
In conversation with Dan Shulman, we're talking about the Jays and Major League Baseball. One more on the Jays, and then we'll get to some MLB stuff. But Chris Colabella last Friday, clearly a tough story for everybody involved. We listened to Jamie Campbell's interview. We had a lot of conversation about it the last couple of days. I'm just curious your position on it, your observation of that story.
Well, I have no knowledge, obviously, whether or not he did it knowingly or it somehow got into his system. But I will tell you this, and I'm sure you've heard a lot of people say this on your air and just around, you know, various Sportsnet entities over the last week or so. You don't want to believe it. This is a really, really good guy. And I don't say that about everybody, and other people in the business don't say that about everybody. This is not the guy you wanted to see this happen to. So either he's a victim of something strange, and then I feel really badly for him, or he's a really good guy who made a bad decision, and then I still feel badly for him, to be honest with you, because although, you know, if you do the crime, you got to do the time, you know, this guy fought as hard as anybody in Major League Baseball to get to Major League Baseball. 7 years playing in the Independent League, unaffiliated from any of the 30 Major League organizations. I don't want to believe it. If we found out tomorrow, if he woke up tomorrow and said, I did it, it wouldn't surprise me. If something happened tomorrow where there was proof that he didn't do it knowingly, that wouldn't surprise me either. I know that, you know, 99 times out of 100, even when there's a denial, the guy did it. But this is one I don't want to believe. He's too good of a guy.
Wanted to pick your brain as we are ending the month of April, just looking back at what is, you know, the early part of the season and teams and players that caught your attention. And the one team that caught your attention is one the Jays just finished up with, the White Sox. Tell me what you saw from them in April.
Well, it's funny because last winter they went out and made a ton of moves and big things were expected of them, and they had a terrible season. And then this winter they did make some moves. I mean, they picked up Navarro and they picked up Lurie, and Todd Frazier was a great pickup. I mean, a good player and a great guy in the room. But nobody really thought they were going to do anything. You know, the Royals are there and the Tigers had reloaded and the Indians have that great starting pitching. And then they have the Adam LaRoche situation in the spring, which I thought might have, you know, really ripped that room apart a little bit and really been a factor all season long. And now they're 16-6, and they got the best record in the American League. Their pitching is great. You know, Chris Sale is one of the three or four best starting pitchers in baseball and has been for a number of years. Quintana looked great last night. Their bullpen is terrific. They're not this good. But looking around the field, just position by position by position, they may not have a ton of superstars, but they're not carrying a lot of dead weight either. They got pretty good players, and I think they may have some staying power this year. I think that would be, from a team perspective, that would be the positive one. The negative one, I think, is Houston. I mean, they were a playoff team last year, and here they are sitting at 7-15 with the worst record in the American League. They'll get better, but their starting pitching is a mess right now. And I think even more, you know, the Blue Jays are dealing with some rough bullpen stuff and the offense not going. But if your starting pitching isn't good, you just can't compete. You just can't do it. It just affects every other part of your ball club. And I think they'll get a little bit better, but I think Houston's got some real concerns right now.
In terms of individuals, I know you've noted three. Let's talk about first Stephen Wright from the Red Sox. What did you see?
Yeah, Stephen Wright, not even really on the radar for the Red Sox into the spring. And then Eduardo Rodriguez, who was going to be their number two starter, hurts his knee in the spring. So Wright, who's a knuckleballer, gets an opportunity, and he's got an ERA in the mid-ones after four starts. He's been their best starter, like David Price included. Joe Kelly goes on the DL, so they're down really two starters who were supposed to be in their rotation, and Stephen Wright has solidified things for them. Their starting pitching hasn't been very good either, one of the worst in the American League, but Wright's been terrific. The St. Louis Cardinals, who I think deal with situations, adversity, whatever you want to say, better than anybody. So their shortstop's Johnny Peralta. He gets hurt. So then they go pick up Ruben Tejada from the Mets. He gets hurt. They try Jed Jerko, a utility infielder, a guy they picked up from San Diego. That doesn't work out so well. So they call up a guy from Cuba, from their system. He's originally from Cuba, Aledmys Diaz, and he's hitting .468 right now. And they've got another guy, 28-year-old rookie, never played in the majors before this year, Jeremy Hazelbaker, who got some time in the outfield because Randall Grichuk was struggling, and he's got five home runs, and he's hitting over .300. Year after year after year, the Cardinals produce players. They bring players out of their system who help them at the major league level. I think they do it better than any other team in baseball. To me, they're kind of like the San Antonio Spurs of baseball. They just year after year, they just keep trucking.
So, Dan, do you have a pulse on that? Is that an institutional franchise thing from the top down, or is there one person, or how does that work in baseball?
I think it's twofold. You know, one, remember when they didn't re-sign Albert Pujols, and it's more common now for the superstar to leave and sign with somebody else. But, you know, back then, whatever it was, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, I can't remember exactly, you know, it was, oh my God, Pujols is leaving St. Louis. What's St. Louis going to do? And St. Louis does not believe John Mozeliak, their VP and GM. The organizational philosophy is you can't sink too much money into one player. It's a team sport. You need 25 guys. You actually need more than that, obviously. But so back then when Pujols left, if memory serves, they extended Yadier Molina. They signed Carlos Beltran to an extension, and I think they also re-upped Adam Wainwright or extended Adam Wainwright. I mean, they took that money and they really spread it around. They believe in the concept of team over individual as much as anybody, and they also have a philosophy. Tony La Russa had it when he was managing there. Mike Matheny has it now, that he's the manager there, next man up. If somebody gets hurt, next man up. It's almost like a military philosophy and a military vibe around the Cardinals. They're very serious, and it's just about next man up. Got to fill a hole, somebody get in there and do the job. Don't make excuses, do the job. And I think the people in the minor league system know they're going to get an opportunity. They're not going to be passed over for the big money free agent all the time. I think from top to bottom in that system, they all understand there's kind of a Cardinal way, and I think they all understand that.
One last April story. Cubs beat the Brewers 7-2. Jake Arrieta moves to 5-0 just in the early part of the season. Pretty impressive.
He's a robot. I mean, he's absolutely a robot. He has, whatever the date is, July something of last year, he has, in the regular season, he has more no-hitters than losses. He's thrown two no-hitters since the middle of last year. He's lost one game since the middle of last year. And, oh, by the way, the game he lost was when Cole Hamels threw a no-hitter against the Chicago Cubs. We've never seen this before. As great as Pedro, Johnson, Maddox, Glavin, Clemens, whatever, there was never a second half of a season like Jake Arrieta had last year. Never. Koufax, Gibson, none of them. And now he's off to the same kind of start this year. He is absolutely phenomenal. And this is a guy who, you know, a few years ago with Baltimore had an ERA over 6. His mechanics were a mess. His mind was a mess. He couldn't figure it out. He wanted to walk away from the game. He was so frustrated. And boy, it's just clicked. He's in incredible shape. I mean, you shake his hand and you want to go get, you put a sling on your arm after your arm hurts so much. He's in great shape. Mentally, he's at the top of his game. The Cubs have let him. They haven't changed his mechanics. He's got kind of quirky mechanics, like not a sidearm guy, but like a cross, you know, he twists a little bit, a cross thrower, and they've said, do what you do. Go do what you have to do. His location is pinpoint. He's must-see TV. You just can't miss a start of his because you never know what's going to happen.
Always a pleasure, Dan. This Sunday, how about this? The Yankees in Boston. That's got to be a lot of fun to work.
Yankees in Boston.
Right?
David Price on the mound for the Red Sox. Nathan Eovaldi for the Yankees. We actually have the same matchup the next two weekends in a row. We've got them next weekend in New York as well. And Boston's playing some pretty good baseball right now. David Price, coming off an ugly one, had a very good one, albeit against Atlanta on Tuesday. The Yankees aren't scoring many runs. They're looking kind of old and frayed around the edges right now. I think they'll smell blood in the water at Fenway this weekend if it gets off to a good start for the Red Sox.
Always a pleasure, Dan. Thanks for doing this. We'll talk to you next Thursday.
Okay, talk to you then.